So you want to start a business. You might think you need a team of people and fancy tech skills, but you don't. You just need GoDaddy Aero. I'm Walton Goggins, and as an actor, I'm an expert in looking like I know what I'm doing. GoDaddy Aero uses AI to create everything you need to grow a business. It'll make you a unique logo. It'll create a custom website. It'll write social posts for you and even set you up with a social media calendar. Get started at GoDaddy.com/Aero. That's GoDaddy.com/AIRO.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
You know how in football, timing is everything? You miss your window by a second and the play's already gone. The holidays are the same way. Everything happens fast, and if you're not ready, you're scrambling at the last minute. That's why Amazon Prime is the real MVP this season.
With Prime's fast, free shipping, you can make those last-minute calls look effortless. Forgot your secret Santa gift? Need something for that office party? Prime's got your back, helping you go from uh-oh to all set faster than a two-minute drill.
Absolutely, Mark, because Prime isn't just about getting things fast. It's about making sure you never miss your shot. It turns that last-minute scramble into a smooth holiday win. So this season, remember, Prime's fast delivery has your back during the holidays, especially when it's down to the wire and can't wait another minute. Last-minute gifts delivered, it's on Prime. Visit Amazon.com/Prime to shop now.
This program is paid for by the Labor and Energy Alliance. All opinions or statements expressed on the program are solely those of Labor and Energy Alliance or their guests and do not reflect the opinions of WPHT or Odyssey. Today's program has been pre-recorded.
Consider a career with the International Brotherhood of Boilermakers. As a Boilermaker apprentice, you'll earn while you learn. We offer excellent wages and benefits. And as part of our no-cost, hands-on apprenticeship program, you'll learn from the best in state-of-the-art training centers and on the job. Become a union Boilermaker and get on your way to a great career.
Visit Boilermakers.org or call 844-IBB-WELD.
And guess where this additional billion gallons of biofuel is going to come from? It's going to come from abroad. That's not an American First energy policy. We're in this together. Labor's in this. Building trades are in this. Refiners are in this. American consumers need us to do this too.
Now across the Jacob Media Network, welcome to the Labor and Energy Show special, exclusively presented by the PBF Energy Paulsboro Refinery and the PBF Delaware City Refinery, in collaboration with the labor unions that build our communities.
If you fix this RINs issue, you're looking at a reduction of 25 to 30 cents a gallon.
This is the Labor and Energy Show, bringing labor leaders, national experts, and political influencers together to educate you about fancy terms like RINs and RGGI, while explaining the truth about energy independence. Welcome to the Labor and Energy Show with J-Doc and Krause.
And welcome in, everyone, to another edition of the Labor and Energy Show with J-Doc and Krause. Great to be with you for another week here in the summer of 2025 as we start to prepare to transition into the fall. J-Doc, a great show and a great lineup. Two good guests with us for the full hour today. And this is kind of, this show represents the core of why we exist. This is an educational-based show, and we hope when the show concludes, our listening audience and our viewing audience will have a better understanding of the topic.
No question, Joe. And today is a special show. Two of my favorite people in our alliance, certainly Chet Thompson, who is the CEO and president of the American Fuel and Petrochemical Manufacturers, AFPM, and Brendan Williams, who's the head of government relations at PBF Energy, who co-produces the show with us every week. So we're going to be talking about something called the RFS, the Renewable Fuel Standard. Okay. And it's you mentioned education. This is a situation that is impacts so many jobs. Okay. And our petrochemical industry. Okay. Our refineries, our jobs in regards to our union jobs, okay, the price of our fuels and our gas, and yet almost nobody understands it, including often the policymakers that are making the decisions. Okay, so when we talk about educating people, we're not only educating the public today, but we're going to be educating our policymakers so that they can make the best decisions possible for our workforce, for our refineries, and of course for the public. So education is what they're going to get today. By the way, shout out to Adrian Broca and Erica Perryman, who are in the green room listening, and of course want to thank them for helping to produce the content for today's show as well. They're also with the AFPM.
I would make an argument, J-Doc, before we go to our first commercial break and get into the show. I would make an argument that now, at this moment in time, it is more important than ever that not only the general public, but also the policymakers have a full understanding of what we're going to talk about today.
Well, you know, a lot of times, Joe, you and I talk about the issues in energy, okay, that impact us so much. And our American, traditional energy companies and our industry is so much more efficient, okay? We talk about the environment. Nobody does it better than we do in the United States, okay? So educating people on the realities of what's going on so they can form, opinions that are educated, just like you and I. So important, and especially because we're making decisions. And also, listen, just because we have an traditional energy friendly White House doesn't mean we can stop educating and advocating and fighting for what's right. If we don't, okay, we're going to find ourselves on the wrong side of this thing. You start closing refineries and doing things like that, they ain't coming back. So it's really important.
We'll get right to it. We'll get to our first commercial break. A quick reminder for our audience throughout the show today, we'll message across the bottom of the screen a way for you to now watch the show on Roku TV, in addition to downloading the podcast on Apple or Spotify. This is the Labor and Energy Show with J-Doc and Krause. Back in a moment.
The Eastern Atlantic States Regional Council of Carpenters is proud to present skilled union workers, including the workers that build and maintain our energy infrastructure. The safest, best trained, and most productive carpenters in the country are on the job. Whether it's energy from nuclear, wind, coal, natural gas, or offshore wind, the EAS carpenters are ready to provide the construction need of an energy industry our families depend on. If you're interested in a job in construction, visit EASCarpenters.org or follow us on social at EAS. S. Carpenters.
Thanks for listening to this edition of the Labor and Energy Show, proudly presented by PBF Energy, also EQT Corporation, American Fuel and Petrochemical Manufacturers, and Monroe Energy.
First chartered in 1903, Steamfitters Local 420 has been constructing and installing mechanical systems throughout the Delaware Valley for over a century. United by excellence, this local is proud to have worked on projects such as the Sun Oil Refineries, Children's Hospital of Philadelphia, and the stadiums for all our Philly teams. From helmets to hard hats, Local 420 represents the history of Philadelphia. Steamfitters Local 420. Jim Snell, Business Manager.
Navigating group Medicare health plans can be overwhelming. That's why Labor First works with plan sponsors to design and manage Medicare plans for union retirees, keeping costs low without compromising the member experience. Retirees can stay stress-free by calling a dedicated healthcare advocate to guide them through their health plans and answer questions. And now Labor First is excited to introduce Health Active, a new solution for active employees and early retirees. Health Active offers the same trusted advocacy support tailored to meet the unique needs of today's active workforce. To learn more, visit laborfirst.com.
This program is paid for by the Labor and Energy Alliance. Today's program has been pre-recorded. Portions of tonight's Labor and Energy special are presented by PBF Energy and supported by members of the labor union community, a collaborative to educate the public and change the narrative.
Hi, welcome back to the Labor and Energy Show here on the Jacob Media Network. We've got a fantastic broadcast. Of course, I want to welcome in our guests. Chet Thompson, how are you, sir?
Doing great, J-Doc. How are you?
I am fantastic. And of course, Brendan Williams, how are you, sir?
I'm hanging in. Hanging out. Although after seeing your commercials, I kind of would rather be at the Jersey Shore, man.
Oh, that's wow. Right, man.
Not too shabby.
Which, by the way, I'll be there. I'll be there this weekend, of course.
And oh, so, nice.
but that's a whole other show, Brendan.
Nobody wants to see that one, J-Doc.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, you know, I'll take the videos of me on the beach, and we'll make sure we sprinkle them into the next show.
Okay.
And so,
you have to watch that one.
You know, we talk about our petrochemical industry, and petrochemicals comprise, most of the things that we use all day and every day, including the bathing suit I'm going to wear on the beach. So it will be, you know, perfect in the perfect context. But maybe we'll save that for another another time slot. Chet, if you would remind our listeners a little bit about yourself and about the AFPM.
Well, J-Doc, as you introduced me, I'm the president and CEO of AFPM. Been here 10 years now. Started my career right alongside Brendan Williams, who was at AFPM. But AFPM is the trade association for the refining and petrochemical and midstream industries. We've been around since 1902, one of the oldest trade associations here in Washington, D.C. We have, again, the great fortune of representing almost all the U.S. refiners. So we have offices here. You know, we're here to advocate for strong energy policies that allow the industry to thrive, policies that help consumers. We're also here to ensure that our members operate to the highest safety standards. We're really proud of that. We are of 500 industry segments that the Department of Commerce tracks, refining and petrochemicals, top five safest industries. We're really proud of that. So in any event, that's what we do. And the RFS is a big part of what we advocate around. And we look forward to talking about it today. No one knows any more about this than Brendan. And let me just give you and Crossy a shout out. What you guys do on this show is fantastic.
Well, it's interesting because, first of all, I don't want Brendan to hear this, but thank God for him because, you know, he's educated me on so many of these issues. And when you talk about the AFPM and advocating for the industry and all your members, the first thing that I think of is, you know, being misunderstood. How many people don't really understand, what our refineries do, the standards and the efficiency, safety, and environmentally. I mean, that is, yeah, you know, such an important thing. And by the way, that's why Krause and I got into this, because at the PES refinery years ago, as you remember, they shut it down. And there was one unit out of 33 that had been impacted, and there was no issues injuries or any situations that were danger to the community. And yet they came in and all of our workers lost their jobs. And it was the saddest thing I can ever remember, having those United Steelworkers in the studio. And when we went to go get, you know, some political support, we couldn't find any. And it was the labor show, not the labor and energy show. And we just literally were shaking our heads going, there's something up here, because a lot of it had to do with the lack of education. Okay. And the narrative was being controlled by other individuals who, quite frankly, didn't even live anywhere close to the refinery. And so we decided to jump in and thank God for Brendan, because he really has held our hand throughout this. And so without further ado, Brendan Williams, if you will, remind our listeners a little bit about yourself and PBF.
Well, thanks, Joe. Brendan Williams, I head up government relations for PBF Energy. We're what's considered a merchant refiner, so we don't produce oil out of the ground. You won't see a PBF gas station. We just buy the crude oil and turn it into the gasoline, diesel, jet fuel, and chemicals that, you know, fuel this machine called America. We have 6 refineries in 5 states, process in total a little under 1 million barrels a day, close to 4,000 employees nationally. And, you know, importantly, particularly as it pertains to this issue we'll be talking about today, we're one of the last companies left on the East and West Coast. We used to have, about 70% more refining capacity on the East Coast. And now, as you mentioned, you know, PES was just one victim, unfortunately. Now we rely on 20% foreign imports to meet the market. So these issues are obviously important for the whole sector, as Chet will talk about, but they certainly really hit home in areas like Greater Philadelphia, like the Eastern Seaboard.
What's interesting is, and we're going to get into the RFS in a minute, but what's really interesting, and because Krause and I were, you know, just lay people like everybody else, you know, and so no real understanding of anything, but common sense stuff did start to hit us. Like, okay, we shut the PES refinery down. Where are we getting these resources now? Okay, and of course the ports and all those things, and we're you know, obviously, you know, a lot of workers on the docks and all those things, but I don't see any picketers, any people picketing the docks, right? Which means we're sitting here going, well, I mean, they're shutting our resources down, our jobs, our refineries, okay, but we still need those same resources, okay? And so they're willing to take them from overseas to replace our jobs and all those things, but they don't want us doing it. And then, of course, as we got educated, we realized that in on the planet, the United States has the highest standards. And so, you know, yeah, we always talk about common sense and energy, okay? And there's none more than there is here with our traditional energy resources. And, of course, our refineries are such a big part of it. And like I said in the opening, I really believe, especially after all these years, people don't understand the consequences of their actions. Okay, and understanding that once you shut down our traditional energy resources, we're now dependent on China, and a lot of these other overseas adversaries for those same resources, and they don't do it nearly as well as we do or our refineries. And so, man, that's why we jumped in. And are we passionate about it? Yeah. So let's get into this conversation about the renewable fuel standard, gentlemen. Chad, I'll ask you, and Brendan, if you'll respond as well. Remind our listeners what the RFS is.
Where to start? Well, I guess I'll start at the beginning, Jeddak. This is a program that was first enacted back in 2005, adjusted in 2007. But at its base case, it is a federal program that mandates an ever-increasing volume of renewable fuels that must be blended into our transportation fuel. So when it started in 2005, I will say it was a fairly modest program. And by the way, Brendan and I are probably two of the few people out there that have been involved in this program from its inception all the way to today. And so it is unfortunately taken a lot out of us over the years. But when it started off, it was a fairly modest program, actually, and it was designed to help make our country a little bit more energy secure by creating an obligation to make more renewable fuels. It was also intended to reduce carbon emissions from the transportation fleet. So when this started off, it was a seven and a half billion gallon program, again, fairly modest. And over the years, it has grown into what amounts is to probably the largest federal mandated program in our country's history. And I'm not exaggerating. It has become enormous. What most consumers have no idea about it. But if you are those listeners, next time you fill up and you see the sticker on the nozzle that says, 10% ethanol, I mean, that's where this came from. It started off requiring ethanol to be blended into our gasoline supply. And again, it's now expanded into other types of what we call advanced fuels, biodiesel, renewable diesel, cellulosic fuels. It's a program that hasn't ever stopped growing, and it has greatly increased the cost of fuel for consumers.
Brendan, you want to jump in there?
Yeah, it's also, unfortunately, a great example of the law of unintended consequences. So as Jeff mentioned, it's kind of a series of nested mandates, almost like buckets contained within each other, kind of like the Russian doll within a doll within a doll, right? And so you could use some fuels for all parts of the mandate and some fuels for only specific parts. But the ethanol portion is the largest portion. And when the law was passed, The maximum implicit volume they had in the statute was less than 10% of the fuel supply based on what the government projected that gasoline consumption would be. Why is that important? Because the fuel supply is really only meant to handle up to 10% ethanol at large. About a quarter of the cars on the road can handle fuel up to E15. There's a small amount of cars that can run on E85. But the bigger problem is, frankly, gas stations. So underground storage tanks, gaskets, pumps, piping, that has to be hardened to offer anything above 10%. And that's why, even after 20 years of this program, out of about 130,000 gas stations on the country, there's only about 3,000 of them that even sell anything higher than E10, which is 10% ethanol. So when they passed the mandate, the volume they mandated, they never thought would be a problem. But we had the Great Recession, we had a couple rounds of fuel economy, and now one of the core problems is you've created, they keep mandating more fuel than the fuel supply can physically handle given these engine and infrastructure constraints. And so that basically means that when you can't meet the mandate and you have to comply with the mandate, we'll get into it a little later, by this crazy, you know, cap and trade credit trading scheme. And the credits are available when fuel is blended. So when you mandate more than you can use, right, they can't generate enough credits, they become scarce. The price goes up significantly, typical law of supply and demand. And as Chet said, in addition to probably the largest mandate of any federal program, it is the largest expense for many refiners. So for a lot of independent refiners, including us, the price of RINs, the cost of RINs, is we spend more on RINs some years than all other operating costs combined. So
tell our listeners, friend, tell our listeners what RINs are.
Yeah, so RINs are those credits I was mentioning. So when you blend a gallon of ethanol or other biofuel into gasoline or diesel, a credit, think about it like a ticket, is detached if you want a visual, and that's called a renewable identification number or RIN. So this program set up where refiners basically have to collect enough of these credits, these RINs, to show compliance. And that's, you know, and you have to collect them. All refiners have to collect them, even if they're not in the part of the supply chain where you can actually physically blend some of this biofuel.
So JDoc, to add a little bit more flavor on this, if your listeners aren't confused enough. So, but in practical sense, what happens in theory, because they're always late, is that EPA in November of a given year will come out and say, for next year, we want the industry must blend, and I'm making up numbers now, right? But 9 billion gallons of ethanol, they must create 1 billion gallons of a cellulosic fuel, they must do 4 billion gallons of what we call biomass-based diesel, okay? So they gather up those total volumes, and then the people that have to comply are actually the refiners. The refiners are obligated parties. And so, you know, you get your share is proportioned to you by how big your refining kit is relative to how much fuel is produced. So at the end of the year, Brendan's facilities will be allocated and say you have to demonstrate compliance by going out and buying RINs that match your obligation. And so these things are, you're out there and they're being bought and sold by many more than just the obligated parties. But one RIN equals 1 gallon. So if Brendan has an obligation of showing that he's representing 0.1% of the share, for example, he has to go out and buy those RINs. And a lot of those costs then are passed through to consumers and results in higher gasoline and diesel costs at the pump.
Having said that, okay, I would venture to say that, you know, obviously people care about what they're paying at the pump. And what is your experience that people really, I mean, obviously it's complicated. You know, we've done a lot of shows and I'm, you know, learning as we speak, but how many people don't really understand this? And therefore it just reminds me of another situation in energy where you look at backdoor ways to shut refineries down. And I say that because you look at the setback issues that we've had on it. No one knows what a setback is, but in California, it caused havoc. And in Pennsylvania, where we're talking about setback legislation, okay, the distance between a structure and a well. You know, I've said this a thousand times. I'll run naked down Broad Street if one of my neighbors knows what the hell it is. I get it. It's a difficult picture. But my point is, it reminds me of another situation that we face in our traditional energy resources that people just don't understand. And therefore, they don't really understand why they're paying more. What is your experience there, Chet, that people, and we have also talked about a lot of our policymakers, don't really understand what it completely is, and therefore the destruction that it causes.
Yeah, we very few people understand this. I joked with Brendan earlier. Very few people in our industry fully understand this. But like many things here in the swamp, you know, once they get created, it's hard to undo them. But yes, I mean, listen, Jadak, to your broader point. You know, people just wake up every day and they expect to find gas stations that are full of products, and they want it to be cheap and reliable. And, you know, our 121 refineries that are out there in this country, you know, wake up every day to try to meet that need. And again, people expect it. They don't, you know, the difficulty of it. And this is just another layer of programming that just makes, you know, what we do more difficult and more expensive. So, but yeah, we wish we could find ways to educate folks, because it's, Jadak, let me just stop for a minute. It's incredible what Brendan's company and other companies do in order to put product on every street corner that people use in every facet of their lives. And anytime I go into a hotel and I see that water bottle that they think I'm going to spend, you know, $7.50 for, and you realize that we take crude oil out of the ground, move it to a refinery, refine it, and get it back to your gas station for $3.50, you know, dollars. It's incredible. And it's incredible. We have the best workforce. You alluded to them. We have, what makes us so much better than our competition around the world is we have the best workforce. We have women and men that get up every day and that bust their backsides to do this job. And so, again, that's why we thank you so much. I mean, it's important for us to educate folks on, you know, this doesn't happen by accident. It happens through hard work, resources, commitment, and why our country would want to make things more expensive and difficult for this industry, which makes literally allows us to thrive, is a head scratcher. And it's because so few people understand what's happening.
Yeah, Chet mentioned the cost. You know, it's a cost of, on average, historically, $20 to $30 billion. It's a big tax on consumers, on refiners. You know, everybody knows, you know, when you look at oil prices on the news, what, you know, a $5-$10 a barrel jump in oil prices is going to do. Well, that's what the RFS program is actually costing. And, you know, there's analysis out there that shows, you know, historically people have been paying 25 cents a gallon because of this program. So and this new proposal really risks potentially sending that higher.
So let's talk about that. We only have a couple minutes left in this segment. And in fact, you know what we're going to do? We're going to go to break a little bit early because we're going to go. We're going to kind of spit fire when we get back. And I'm going to say, I don't want to break it up. So tell you what, let's pay some bills. We're going to have more from Labor and Energy Show in just a minute.
What's a Boilermaker? We're the skilled welders, riggers, and craftspeople who will help you grow your competitive edge. We step up when others step back, and we do the job right, on time, on budget, and safely. No drama, just results, every time. We're the International Brotherhood of Boilermakers, and everything we do begins with our bond. Let's get to work together. Visit bestintrade.com.
Pat Lee Hackey has become part of my morning prayers.
I was a full-time nurse, just lifting up a patient.
A tractor trailer came up behind this, pushed us right through.
Right off the bat, you just felt comfortable. I felt somebody had my back.
He says, I'm going to do everything that I can do for you.
You guys are amazing. I love you.
Call Pond Lahaki Giordano, highly rated Philadelphia workers' compensation attorneys.
First chartered in 1903, Steamfitters Local 420 has been constructing and installing mechanical systems throughout the Delaware Valley for over a century. United by excellence, this local is proud to have worked on projects such as the Sun Oil Refineries, Children's Hospital of Philadelphia, and the stadiums for all our Philly teams. From helmets to hard hats, Local 420 represents the history of Philadelphia. Steamfitters Local 420. Jim Snell, Business Manager.
This program is paid for by the Labor and Energy Alliance. Today's program has been pre-recorded. Portions of tonight's Labor and Energy special are being supported by the members of the labor union community, including Steamfitters Local 420, Jim Snell, Business Manager, the Eastern Atlantic States Regional Council of Carpenters,
and the United Steelworkers.
Welcome back to the Labor and Energy Show on the Jacob Media Network. You can now find us on Apple TV, Roku TV, and Fire TV through the NetStream app. And of course, on the radio. We've got a fantastic broadcast. Chet Thompson, President and CEO of the AFPM, and of course, Brendan Williams of PBF Energy. So let's get into the education part, okay? We're talking about the renewable fuel standard. Let's talk about the EPA's latest proposal. And we're going to spit fire because we got a lot of questions. Chet, you want to jump on that? And then Brendan, follow up.
Sure. Well, so yes, EPA has come out with what we call their set two proposal. It's a proposal that would cover calendar years 2026 and 2027. Here are the key takeaways, JDOC. This will be the most expensive program in the history of the country. Okay, I said that once before a couple years ago. This beats that by 2x. By our estimate, this program will cost $70 billion, with a B, $70 billion. And by EPA's own estimate, it will return a benefit of $200 million. So $70 billion costs $200 million net return. It's 2.5 times more expensive than 2023, which was the last most expensive year. It sets the highest renewable fuel obligation, again, in the history of this country. It also, you know, does some things, proposes to do some things, JDOC, that ironically will make us more dependent on foreign fuel and feedstock, even though this whole program, the intent of it was to make us more energy independent. They propose some things that are going to make us less energy independent. So that's it in a nutshell. I will say, just so your listeners don't think I'm only negative, there is one really positive thing they've done here, and that is they've actually proposed to do away what we call e-RINs, which is generating credits through electric vehicle usage. So that's good. But by and large, it's a incredibly expensive program that does very little to help us become energy secure. In fact, to the contrary, it makes us less secure.
And so, and Brendan, before I come to you all, this is for both of you. The current administration, obviously, very traditionally energy pro, okay? What's going on there? In other words, we've heard President Trump talk about obviously supporting our traditional energy resources. All kinds of, discussions and about supporting what we do here in the United States. What is the current administration talking about their EPA? What are they saying, Brendan, in regards to this?
Well, yeah, as Chet mentioned, it's a tricky issue because it's so complicated, this program. And it's not really a partisan issue. It's more of a regional issue. So there's a lot of folks in the Midwest that view it as an ag subsidy and view it as important for whether the corn farmer or the soy farmer, et cetera. But I think the issue is the program is so complex that it's actually stopped really doing anything for the constituencies in the ag community that it was in part meant to do things for. So, and again, because it's not partisan, you'll get conservative Republicans like a Chuck Grassley and liberal Democrats like a Tammy Duckworth, usually trying to bump this thing higher because they think it's going to benefit the ag sector. But in reality, what's happened, for all the reasons Chet mentioned, is created this crazy credit trading scheme. And when you mandate volumes that simply can't be met, on the ethanol side, they mandate about 800 more gallons 800 million more gallons than you can actually fit into the fuel supply. So all that's doing is driving credit prices up for these compliance credits, the RINs I talked about. And that's not benefiting the farmer. That's not, our company has to go often buy it from either large retail chains that can blend ethanol into gasoline but don't have any obligation under the program. Sometimes we buy it from our competitors who do more than our bigger competitors who do more than just refine, right? They're in every part of the supply chain. So it's really just added cost to the overall program without really doing anything to push more ethanol into the fuel supply. There's another part of the mandate. It's essentially the diesel part of the mandate. So they mandate more ethanol than you can use. How do you actually comply with that program? Well, we have to over-comply by making a product called bio or renewable diesel. It's pretty much diesel fuel made out of ag feedstocks. But that is still significantly more expensive than petroleum diesel. It needs to be subsidized at about $4 to $5 per gallon to be economic. So the credits for that are super expensive. So EPA basically says, we're going to mandate more ethanol than you can use. But don't worry, you can over-comply on the diesel side here with this other fuel. But that fuel is so expensive that it just drives the price of all the credits up, and it just adds this, you know, $70 billion Chet was talking about, and 25 cents a gallon. And in doing so, it does put a lot of refining capacity at risk. When this is your largest cost, when you have to, you know, you guys know crude markets are very volatile, and refiners are the first purchaser of crude oil. So we're the first to experience that volatility. So in that environment, when you just keep unnecessarily lumping massive new costs that dwarf everything else onto domestic refiners, you get to a point where some might not be able to hack it. And we have seen this program contribute to refinery closures in the past. East Coast alone has lost, you know, as I mentioned before, about 70% of its 2010 refining capacity. The U.S. has actually lost 1.4 million barrels per day net since 2019. We used to be the world's largest refiner. China is the world's largest refiner.
My question, and we have a lot of questions. What are they going to do when the refineries all close? Okay, I mean, what is, you know, like, what are they going to do then? Okay, and you know, this, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure out how much stress they're putting on our refineries. Okay, what is the answer to that question?
We've seen what happens, unfortunately. So on the East Coast, you know, what happened to the, you know, as you mentioned, all these refineries closed down, but we still need the fuel. So where is it coming from? Well, there's a pipeline that comes from the Gulf Coast called Colonial Pipeline. That filled up at first, but that's pretty much full now. And that's about half of the fuel for the region. And then the rest of the gap left by those closed refineries is coming from overseas. It's about 20 to 25% of the product on the East Coast. And to show you how significant that is, OPEC is 20% of the world's crude supply, but we see what their decisions can do, you know, to global oil prices. And the West Coast has its own challenges, as you know. But, you know, because of refinery closures on the West Coast, the similar things happening there.
So we talk about the EPA's proposed, obviously the largest mandate ever for 2026 and 27. But what does 2025 look like, Brendan?
Well, that's, you know, interesting. So 2025 standards already on the books, and you can, EPA actually has data on their website that tracks the creation of these credits when biofuel is blended. So you could tell, you know, are we on track to meet the standard or not by looking at EPA's webpage. And EPA's own data says we're about a billion gallons short of meeting this year's mandate, let alone any increase. And one of the key reasons for that is that, you know, again, I mentioned there's two key portions of the mandate, the ethanol portion, and then there's a mandate on the diesel side. Well, everybody was really relying on, as I mentioned, bio and renewable diesel, but there were several government actions that raised the cost of making those fuels. So in the, you know, the new tax reconciliation bill that just passed, they said you can't get the tax credit if you use foreign feedstocks. So if you're importing foreign ag products, or in some cases there's waste products like used cooking oil you make the stuff out of, but you can't get the tax credit if you're making fuel out of that. And then in this EPA proposal, they say, well, you get only half the amount of credits if you're making fuel from foreign feedstocks. And so The problem there is there's just not enough domestic feedstocks. When they mandate volumes as large as they mandate, and for ag feedstocks, you don't just need them for biofuel, right? You need soy for biofuel, animal feed, food. So there's not enough domestic feedstocks. A lot of times there's logistical constraints, like you don't have rail capacity to move them. There's not enough Jones Act barges to bring them down the Mississippi. So we need foreign feedstocks for about 20% of what we take to make renewable diesel in this country. And so we would love to just be able to run all domestic feedstocks, but when they're not available and you penalize using foreign feedstocks, all you do is just raise the price of making the stuff up exponentially. And so despite the credits, those RFS credits I talk about, the price of those has gone up 80% in the beginning of the year. And the biofuel crowd would historically say, oh, well, when the price goes up, people will make more of it. It's supply and demand. But since they made it so more expensive, much more expensive to make it, the extra cost they added to make the fuel is offsetting the rise in these credits and is leading to the shortfall. So we're going to be 1 billion gallons short, let alone, you know, what might be available for these massive increases they're proposing.
Chet, you talk about, you know, the conversations you have with your members about, you know, these facts. I mean, it's almost like, it's not almost, it's like being in the Twilight Zone. Talk about that, you know, I mean, obviously, Brendan is at the forefront of the conversation. But talk about how your members react to these, you know, really just ridiculous standards.
Well, there's certainly a lot of frustration, as Brendan says, you know, this is a huge impact for a lot of our members. I will say that, you know, I have the good fortune of representing, you know, membership on the complete spectrum from the smallest to the largest. And as you might imagine, everyone's impacted a little bit differently from this program. You know, the small refiners, a lot of those actually operate in markets where, you know, they're not even able to pass along all these costs. And for them, it's existential, JDoc. You know, this is their largest compliance cost. If you're in a market where you can't, you know, pass along some of these costs, well, you can imagine that over time, it's going to jeopardize or compromise your ability to continue to operate. Some of the larger ones have responded to these programs by, like Brendan alluded to what they're doing, they've gotten actually into the business of making renewable fuels. A lot of capital, a lot of things that could have been invested in making sure our refining kit stays strong have now been invested in these other programs. And so, you know, they need this program to work a little bit differently. But the bottom line is, you know, in my 10 years at AFPM, I mean, this issue has dominated our advocacy. You know, at what we're, you know, we're trying to do, JDoc, our number one goal is to get these volumes right, to get it to a place that we can achieve these volumes in a realistic kind of way, minimize costs for consumers, and to do all this in a way that creates certainty. There's so much uncertainty in the market right now, as Brendan will tell you. You know, we're dealing with, we don't even know, we're challenging volumes from 2023 in the cellulosic program. We don't know yet what the volumes are going to be for 26 and 27. We don't know if we're going to be able to meet 25. We have new tax policies, tariff policies, and now EPA's introduced this new, reduced credit for foreign fuels. And so there's so much uncertainty, it's creating havoc right now, which is half the reason this program is so expensive. So our goal is to continue to educate folks. And I will say one thing to supplement what Brendan said, JDoc, to be fair to the administration, you know, they're caught in a bit in the middle here a bit. And, you know, I don't think anything they do is intended to be negative towards us, but they are trying to subsidize the ag industry in a way that the more you subsidize them, it hurts us. Okay. And I think they're still struggling to find that center ground. And it's our job to try to keep educating them in a way that, you know, they do better at what they've been doing.
Yeah. So I was going to say, what can the EPA do to address the specific costs around corn, ethanol, and the RFS?
Well, there are some things they can do. You know, for starters, they can follow the data. I mean, they have created this proposal based on a very limited and certainly outdated data set, JDoc. They are making assumptions that anyone remotely knowledgeable about the industry could tell EPA is incorrect. In other words, they are looked at limited data for 2023 and 2024, and they have projected all this domestic production of biodistillates that are going to be produced in this country using homemade feedstocks. And the truth is, that's not going to happen, as Brendan said. So if we don't have that capacity, it means we're going to have to bring in foreign feedstock and foreign fuel to satisfy these obligations, right? But at the same time, they've proposed changes to the rule that will give, you know, that would undervalue these very feedstock. So that EPA could fix this by doing that. They could also do one simple thing, JADAC, we've been advocating for years. As it relates to ethanol, all we have ever said to the agency is make the volume equal what we can actually blend in this country. Okay? So, for example, we know that today they could likely blend about 13.8 billion gallons of ethanol into our fuel supply. Instead, EPA proposes and sets that volume at 15 billion. If they made that one change alone, this program's cost would be cut in half. In half. Now, to be honest with your listeners, the reason they don't do that is purely political. It's 100% political why they don't do that. It's because nobody wants to tell the corn farmers, the ethanol producers, that they should only get what they should get. But that alone could cut the program in half, JDOC. And this, we're going to be advocating over the course of the next, you know, several weeks, which is the comment period for this proposal, for this administration to do that. And by the way, the beauty of it, of our proposal, is if they did that, it would not reduce by a single drop the amount of ethanol that's blended into the fuel stream. Okay, because what most people don't realize is that refiners make what we call bobs. We make a product that is specifically designed to be blended with ethanol before it's sold. So we're going to do it with or without this bloody program. EPA, again, is doubling the cost of the program just to say that they're mandating 15 billion gallons of ethanol.
JDOC, that's one of the frustrating things about this program is EPA actually says in the rule, we're going to mandate 15, even though we know we can't meet it. So you guys will actually just over comply with this more expensive part of the mandate to meet the ethanol standard. So as Chet was saying, they're basically acknowledging that in mandating something that is unachievable, they're just raising costs with no benefit. Whereas if they did what Chet said, there would be literally no change in the amount of biofuel consumed, and refiners and consumers would be paying a heck of a lot less.
It's what's odd. I'm looking at this and I'm saying, well, In a sense, you look at the stereotype of the refining industry, and now you're talking about the corn lobby, the lobby and the farmers and all that. Is that, in a sense, are you suffering because of that stereotype? And because we all care about our farmers and our farming industry and all that. But, you know, the first thing I'm thinking of is, it's our big refining industry, the stereotype of the unlimited coffers and all that. And, of course, the struggling, obviously, farmers in America. And so it seems like, you know, just off the top, you're suffering a little bit because of that stereotype. You know, obviously, it's political. But does that make sense at all?
Yeah, it does. I mean, you know, and Chet could build on this as well. But you know, a lot of people just don't understand. You know, they if you see the stories, it says the oil industry, right?
Right, exactly. That's what I mean. Right.
You know, it's not like one industry. There's some people that are in every part of the supply chain. There's some people that are like PBF. We're just a merchant refiner. We don't own gas stations. We don't take it out of the ground. In fact, you can't actually blend ethanol at a refinery because you can't ship the mixture in a pipeline. So we make, as Chet mentioned, the petroleum portion of what you put in your tank that has to be blended with ethanol and other things.
But you're not even blending it.
No, you can only do that blending at those terminals that look like tank farms you drive by on the highway where the trucks pull up and get the fuel, right? So whoever owns those controls all the RINs that are generated. We have, you know, we're not even that part of the supply chain. So
what's also interesting is the RFS was supposed to be about energy independence, okay? And what's interesting about it is, in our conversation, it would make us more dependent on foreign fuels at this point, right? I mean,
and it would do it without really, as Chet has mentioned and I mentioned, without actually adding any more ethanol into the fuel supply. All people are just moving big government credits around because of the mandate, because they have to get them for compliance and just making fuel more expensive.
Yeah, I mean, you talk about the public, okay, and obviously, you know, more of a cost at the gas station, okay, at the pumps. But also, let's talk a little bit about the potential impact on jobs, okay? I mean, you know, the union workforce, that's the other thing that we, you know, so putting two and two together from where I'm sitting, it, you know, it looks pretty easy. If we don't protect, okay, you know, our refineries and our industry, we're going to lose our jobs, okay? And, you know, and I, you know, one of our points also, let's be straight, is to educate labor on a lot of these issues. And to, you know, to talk about it, you know, from the horse's mouth, talk about the impact in a sense, Chet, you know, on jobs and our union community, our union industry, which depends heavily on our refineries to, you know, I mean, for our workforce, you know how many man hours we lost when PES went down the tubes? I mean, you know, so it was one of the saddest things I've ever seen. Talk about that and why it's important for all of us to get engaged in this issue, because it's not, it's at the price at the pump, it's impacting. Okay. But when you talk about jobs, there's also heavy risk there.
Well, yeah, well, let me just, you know, back up and about the industry writ large. Yeah. I mean, it, you know, we have, you know, directly and indirectly, employ about 3 million people. When I say indirectly, for every job that's in a refinery, for every job that's in a petrochemical facility, 42 other jobs are created. So this isn't just within the refinery gates. This is outside. This is all the support, the infrastructures for turnarounds and for maintenance and for safety. I mean, we're huge. You look around, Jadak, you know better than I do, because you talk a lot and passionately about PES. We have facilities that are the lifeblood of communities all across this country. I mean, lifeblood in terms of, you know, employment, taxation, being a part of it. And, you know, when a refinery shuts down, and as Brendan said, we've lost a number of refineries since 2019. Very few people know that. We have two more refineries that have announced shutdowns in California. I mean, how are we letting this happen? So, yes, this, I mean, the RFS is one thing that impacts us. Another headwind. It's really important for the smaller refineries, really, you know, and that's why we haven't touched it yet. But there's a big issue around what we call hardship relief. Small refineries are entitled to seek relief if they can demonstrate that this program is causing them disproportionate hardship. EPA is sitting on over 200 petitions right now for which small refineries are seeking relief. And for them, I mean, again, this program and the impacts of it are existential to their, you know, their ability to, you know, to survive. And so that's another issue we have to talk about. But, you know, people should not blink away just how incredibly important this is to employment and the health of many many cities and communities around the country.
And J-Doc, you know, Chet brings up a great case study because in the first Trump administration, so these hardship relief, they're essentially exemptions, you know, small refiners. And it's very small, like 75,000 barrels a day or lower. It's still a very big business in most industries, but, you know, small for refining. Each of our plants, for example, is about twice that, and we're considered, you know, mid-sized refiner. But in the first Trump administration, they actually granted a substantial portion of small refinery exemptions. Well, I think almost all of them that applied got exemptions. But what happened? You didn't see backtracking in ethanol blending. All their fuel got blended with ethanol and generated these credits. But since they didn't have to purchase the credits for compliance, right now the supply exceeds the demand. So the price of the credits came way down. Biofuel was still consumed. And, you know, it should have been seen as a win-win. And now, and despite that, now, one of the things EPA is talking about in the proposal is, well, if they do that this time, they'll actually push those exemptions on everybody else who doesn't get the exemptions. And again, since their fuel, get the small refinery exempt fuel gets blended with ethanol anyway, that does nothing but just raise costs for everybody across the board. So that's also something, you know, we'll be pushing for in the final rule to have EPA not do. They call it reallocation. But, you know, they're entitled to issue these small refinery exemptions, but they also should not put that obligation on everybody else. That's another good point. This is a proposal, so folks can still take action and try and make their voice heard to get this changed.
And that's what I was just going to say. We only have a minute left. We've left so much on the table, so we got to obviously, we have to plan another broadcast. But what can listeners do? Okay, what can union leaders do? What can union members do? And our general public? Okay, what can they do? To turn this situation around?
Well, there's two things. I mean, one, there is a comment period right now. I can't imagine too many of your listeners would want to write comments, but they can certainly reach out to us at afpm.org and find out what we're saying and why. But what can really help, JDoc, is for your listeners, for the workforce, union members, I mean, to light up, the switchboards of their policymakers, okay? Because, that's what's going to move things. Is when folks in this town over the course of the next couple months, when they're, carving this thing up and deciding what to do and how much and by when, we need policymakers to weigh in.
If you go to the AFPM website, Joe.
I was just going to say that.
They have this great Empower program. They make it easy. There's a letter already written. You can add personal touches. You can fill out some info. It gets to your members of Congress and it gets to the comment period. Folks could also go. A lot of the folks who listen to the show are also members of the Fueling American Jobs Coalition. That website also has comments. I encourage folks to do both. But make their voices heard. AFPM's got great resources through Empower. We still have time. We got about a week and a half before comments are due. And then EPA actually has to review those comments and then figure out what changes they do or don't want to make. So there's plenty of time for folks to make their voices heard.
And the website is empower.afpm.org. Okay.
Yeah.
Take action. And I we've sent this out to our labor and energy board and all of our labor leaders several times, but coincidentally this morning. And I think the comment period is what, August 8th. Right.
Let me just add one thing. Because in this last couple of minutes, I wouldn't want any of your listeners to think that, we're anti-renewables or
anti-ag,
because we're not. We're not. Our members are some of the largest producers of renewable fuels in the country. This is about striking balance, reasonable balance, the same thing that we talk about in all aspects of our lives, balance. And we can fix this proposal such that ag and renewables and refining can all thrive.
Yeah, that's a great point. I mean, we make renewable diesel. We don't want to see that go away. We just want to make sure that the government doesn't make it so expensive for us to make it that we can't make it while still mandating it, right? It's, common sense and energy, as you always said, needs to prevail here.
Fantastic. Chet Thompson, President and CEO of the AFPM, and Brendan Williams, Head of Government Relations for PBF Energy. Gentlemen, thank you so much for being on the program and all of our listeners. We gave the website, obviously, empower.afpm.org. Gentlemen, thanks so much for being on the program.
Thanks for having me.
The Eastern Atlantic States Regional Council of Carpenters is proud to present skilled union workers, including the workers that build and maintain our energy infrastructure. The safest, best trained, and most productive carpenters in the country are on the job. Whether it's energy from nuclear, wind, coal, natural gas, or offshore wind, the EAS carpenters are ready to provide the construction need of an energy industry our families depend on. If you're interested in a job in construction, visit EASCarpenters.org or follow us on social at EAS Carpenters.
This edition of the Labor and Energy Show is proudly presented and sponsored by PBF Energy, Monroe Energy, National Mining Association, and the United Steelworkers. Navigating group Medicare health plans can be overwhelming. That's why Labor First works with plan sponsors to design and manage Medicare plans for union retirees, keeping costs low without compromising the member experience. Retirees can stay stress-free by calling a dedicated healthcare advocate to guide them through their health plans and answer questions. And now Labor First is excited to introduce Health Active, a new solution for active employees and early retirees. Health Active offers the same trusted advocacy support tailored to meet the unique needs of today's active workforce. To learn more, visit laborfirst.com.
This program is paid for by the Labor and Energy Alliance. Today's program has been pre-recorded. Portions of tonight's Labor and Energy Special are presented by PBF Energy and supported by members of the labor union community, a collaborative to educate the public and change the narrative.
And back here on the Labor and Energy Show with J-Doc and Krause, the only 30 seconds remaining. J-Doc, I'll give it to you quickly, please.
No, I just want to thank Chet Thompson and Brendan Williams for being on the program. You can see how passionate they are. And like you said, it's about striking a balance, and it's about educating the people. And Joe, I'm just so proud. Again, I want to thank Adrian Broca and Erica Perryman for putting the content for the program together. Of course, yourself. The mission is to educate people so everybody can benefit. And I think Chet and Brendan did a fantastic job at getting the word out.
No doubt about that. That's going to do it for this edition of the Labor and Energy Show. As Chet and Brendan both talked about with you, J-Doc, as we say goodbye with this edition, light up the phones of the policymakers. That is the most important thing that you can do. See you next time, everyone.
This program is paid for by the Labor and Energy Alliance. All opinions or statements expressed on the program are solely those of Labor and Energy Alliance or their guests and do not reflect the opinions of WPHT or Odyssey. Today's program has been pre-recorded.
So you want to start a business. You might think you need a team of people and fancy tech skills, but you don't. You just need GoDaddy Aero. I'm Walton Goggins, and as an actor, I'm an expert in looking like I know what I'm doing, even when I don't. And I like the sound of starting my own business, Walton Goggins Goggle Glasses. But I'm an actor. I don't know what I'm doing. I needed help. GoDaddy Aero uses AI to create everything you need to grow a business. It'll make you a unique logo. It'll create a custom website. It'll write social posts for you and even set you up with a social media calendar. I didn't even realize I needed a social media calendar. GoDaddy Aero will take your idea that sounds good and make a business that looks like you know what you're doing. GoDaddy Aero can get your business up and running in minutes. You know what that sounds like? It sounds like a plan. Get started at GoDaddy.com/Aero. That's GoDaddy.com/AIRO.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
You know how in football, timing is everything? You miss your window by a second and the play's already gone. The holidays are the same way. Everything happens fast, and if you're not ready, you're scrambling at the last minute. That's why Amazon Prime is the real MVP this season.
With Prime's fast, free shipping, you can make those last-minute calls look effortless. Forgot your secret Santa gift? Need something for that office party? Prime's got your back, helping you go from uh-oh to all set faster than a two-minute drill.
Absolutely, Mark, because Prime isn't just about getting things fast. It's about making sure you never miss your shot. It turns that last-minute scramble into a smooth holiday win. So this season, remember, Prime's fast delivery has your back during the holidays, especially when it's down to the wire and can't wait another minute. Last-minute gifts delivered, it's on Prime. Visit Amazon.com/Prime to shop now.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
This holiday season, choose gifts that feel thoughtful and practical with Omaha Steaks. Whether you're hosting or gifting, they deliver the world's best steak experience, and it makes you look like you planned way ahead. They've got USDA-certified tender steaks, juicy burgers, comfort meals, and tons more. Gifting Omaha Steaks is honestly one of the easiest wins. Everything arrives beautifully packaged, super convenient, and the quality is unbelievable. Their filet mignons are some of the most tender I've ever had. And the variety means you can personalize every gift. Plus, orders placed by 6 p.m. Eastern ship same day. And everything is backed by their 100% guarantee. It's holiday gifting made simple. Save big on gourmet gifts and more holiday favorites with Omaha Steaks. Visit omahasteaks.com for 50% off site-wide during their Sizzle All the Way sale. And for an extra $35 off, use promo code T-BONE at checkout. Terms apply. See site for details. That's omahasteaks.com, code T-BONE.